This week, April 22nd, 2014, on The Digital Story. Is a Sony RX200 in the works? An ultra-nimble 4x5 camera. Loom and Doom. And Flickr 3.0 for iOS is solid. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I have some excellent topics for you this week. We're going to cover some hardware in the weekly update, and that's always a lot of fun. Then we'll roll right into Flickr 3.0 for iOS, and I'm covering it because it's new and it is solid. It is really good. We have a little something different for you this week on the Screening Room, something from Nigel French, which I think you'll enjoy, and Nigel's a terrific instructor. We'll have to do some Loom and Gloom just because it's a topic that I covered before and now it is no more, and I'll tell you what's going on there. And then, of course, we have our Virtual Camera Club news. So lots going on. I'm going to dig right in on the weekly update. Start out with a Wanderlust Travel 4x5 film camera. Very interesting. Now, a lot of photographers may have shot with a 35mm film camera. Some may have shot with a medium format film camera. A lot of folks never shot with a 4x5 film camera, even though the quality is excellent, right? You have this huge negative, 4 inches by 5 inches, this negative that, you know, this outstanding, like Ansel Adams kind of quality. But the problem with 4x5 cameras was, and this is why I sold mine way back when, is that they're too darn big. I mean, you can't carry them around. You have to use a tripod. They're cumbersome. And, you know, they're just the antithesis of nimbleosity. Well, Wanderlust is going to change all of that. And they have developed the Wanderlust Travel 4x5 film camera. Now listen to this. This is from their website. Fully loaded, the Travel Wide is lighter than a DSLR. In fact, at 275 grams, which is 9.7 ounces, it's the lightest 4x5 ever made. But thanks to its high-impact unibody construction, it's also one of the toughest. So the Travel Wide accepts 90mm Schneider lenses. It'll accept some other ones too, but it's really designed for that, which you can get for very little on the used market these days because, let's face it, 4x5s aren't that popular at the moment. To make sure that you can start shooting right away, they're including one of their pin-wide pinholes, so you can start using the camera. That now, this is provided that you have some sort of 4x5 sheet holder or 4x5 Polaroid back, because you also need that. They give you the camera, the ground glass, the pinhole, all that sort of stuff. You have to come up with the lens that you want and the camera back that you want. Now, shooting 4x5 Polaroids is a lot of fun. In fact, I used to enjoy that a lot more than I did shooting 4x5 film because, you know, the film you had to take in and get processed, people would make a contact print of it, right? And, you know, you'd actually have a nice print that was a contact print of your negative. That was nice. I have to admit, I like that. But the Polaroids were a blast. And I'll tell you, one of the things that this camera might bring back is Polaroid transfers. Because Polaroid transfers from a 4x5 Polaroid is very nice. Now, what is a Polaroid transfer? This is neat. If you've never done this, this is like where art and photography really have a nice intersection. You get paper, like, you know, some watercolor paper or something. Something that has some nice texture. It's very good fibery paper. And you take a 4x5 with the Polaroid. You peel it apart and you transfer it onto the watercolor paper. And you do this, I think you immerse it in water, as I recall, do a little rolling and stuff, stays on there for a certain amount of time, and then you peel it off. Everyone is different. Every time you do this, it turns out differently. And you get what looks like a painting on paper that is designed for painting also. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I still have some around here that I did when I had the 4x5 camera. And I just love them. And they're unique, one of a kind. Now, you can scan them, of course, and do something with them and print them on some neat paper. But the original that's on that fine art watercolor paper, that's a one of a kind thing. And I think that this Wanderlust Travel 4x5 camera could bring that back, because the camera you can carry now in a regular case. You can hand hold it. You can get some Polaroid film and a film back and do some pretty neat stuff, not to mention film itself. So it's going to start shipping this summer for $149. I have the website in the show notes. It's basically, I believe it's wanderlust.com, but the link is in the show notes. If you're interested in this sort of thing, doing something different, something kind of filmy, and something with a large Polaroid or a large negative, this camera is worth taking a look. I was very impressed with it. In other news, well, iFi is in the headlines again. And this time, this is from Imaging Resource, they put your camera in the cloud with Android and iOS apps. So what are they up to? Well, they're doing their own cloud backup service. And basically what it is, you use your iFi Mobi card, you subscribe to the service. So then when your pictures stream to your iOS device or your Android device, then if you have the cloud service, then the device sends those images up to the cloud also for storage and protection. iFi says that your US $49 annual subscription costs just a touch over $4 per month and provides you with unlimited storage. So that's kind of the real thing there, right? Unlimited storage for $49 a year. And notes that the images are transferred at full resolution. As has always been the case, iFi Mobi cards don't transfer RAW files and only allow videos for certain formats. So this is a little interesting to me, but not very interesting. And the reason why is that compared to the other offerings right now, Flickr, Carousel by Dropbox, PhotoStream, stuff like that, the fact that it has to go from your camera to your device and then your device up. And I use a Mobi card. I mean, I like the Mobi card, but most of the stuff I drag off of there. And, you know, I'm just using it in certain situations. And I'm not shooting with a Mobi card all the time. So what about, you know, all the other situations? If you're a dedicated iFi Mobi user, and that is what you shoot with all the time, you might want to take a look at this. It's a decent idea. I'm just not sure how much traction they're going to get with it. Anyway, thanks to Imaging Resource for posting that story so that we can pick it apart, right? Okay. And finally, in the weekly update, this is a rumor. I love rumors. I love a good rumor, just like the next photographer. This one's from Petapixel. And they say that the new Sony RX200, well, first of all, we don't know for sure there is going to be an RX200, right? There's a RX100 and an RX100 2 or Mark II right now, which is a very high-end premium compact camera. I think one of the best compact cameras out there. Those cameras, they have zooms that go out to 100 millimeter, but the problem is with the RX100 is that as you zoom out, your maximum aperture shrinks to all the way down to 4.9. So, okay, so here's the scuttlebutt. So, you know, we're talking about the 28 to 100 millimeter equivalent lens on these cameras. The new RX200 patent shows an exciting 28 to 100 millimeter equivalent f1.8 to 2.8 lens. So that's the thing, right? If they do an update to the RX100, and they call it the RX200, they have tried to patent this new zoom for it that is much brighter. So, you know, and they say the current RX100, RX100 Mark II, they have the same focal length, but of course, you know, they're not nearly as bright. So the new lens would mean a much better low light experience, even when you're a bit further away from your subject. In other words, if you have to use the tele. So that is some good scuttlebutt. We'll keep our eyes out for that. One thing I'll tell you about the RX series, you know, they're not cheap cameras. You know, you really pay a premium price, but they are an excellent camera. They're one of the compact cameras that I do recommend to people looking for a high-end compact, and especially if it's the only camera they're carrying, you know, where you want something that's really good. So we'll see what happens if there is indeed ever an RX200. And if there is, does it have this new f1.8 to 2.8 zoom lens? Sounds tasty. I have to admit that. And that is this week's weekly update. Okay, moving on to story number two. Let's talk about Flickr 3.0. So Flickr 3.0 for iOS. This just came out since the last podcast. I think it came out over the weekend, actually. It's been so interesting for me because I have the Flickr title on lynda.com, the essential training, and that baby has required a lot of attention because Yahoo, the way that they're doing things is they're not, you know, they say, okay, we'll work on it a little bit. And then, you know, they work on it. But they'll change a bunch of stuff and then they'll release it. So you think, oh, okay, so this is the new Flickr for the iPhone. And then a couple of months later, they'll do some other stuff and change the look again and release another. And so then I've had to go back into the studio over and over again, updating this title much more than I have most titles. After the last update, we felt like, okay, Yahoo's probably settled down a bit now, and we probably have the Flickr mobile that we're going to have for a while. Well, imagine my surprise this weekend when I saw the new Flickr 3.0. So we had been working with Flickr 2.0, Flickr 3.0, and it is a total redesign. So guess where I'll be headed? So I'll probably be going down I have some other things to record, so I'll probably be heading down to Carpinteria next month. And this will be one of the things I want to update. That's sort of the challenging news for me personally. Now, here's the good news. This Flickr 3.0 is sweet. I really like it. Now, I posted a story about it on a digital story, and there were some nits from some folks that are complaining about this and that. And of course, you know, there's always going to be a couple things you don't like. But I'll tell you, overall, they really did a good job with this. And I have a feeling, and we'll see how this works out. I have a feeling this is going to be the Flickr for iOS that sticks around for a while because it is really good. So, you know, what have they done? Well, they redesigned the interface. They've done the thing that I actually wanted them to do in the first place, which is now it's more like Instagram when you're browsing photos from your contacts. So all the folks that, you know, you want to follow and you think they're interesting. Now, when you tap on that, you know, down at the bottom, when you tap on that tab, it's the one to the left. What you see is their latest image in this sort of Instagram style. I'm going to go ahead and just like pull it up right now on my phone so I can give you a very nice description of what's going on. So it's very Instagram style. So, you know, you just swipe and you see the last photo from any of these folks. And then you see something that you like. You go, wow, that's kind of interesting. If you tap on it, then you go into lightbox mode on that image. And you, if it's a horizontal shot, you can change the orientation of your phone so you get a good look on it. You tap, double tap on it, you can zoom in a bit. And then tap on the X in the upper left-hand corner, and then you're back into the stream again. Now, when you're in the stream, you see a shot that you really like, you can double tap on it and mark it as a favorite while you're in the stream. So this makes it enjoyable. And, you know, already since they've done this, I have been browsing Flickr much more than I was before. Normally, if I had a few minutes and a cup of coffee, I would go to Instagram and browse Instagram and see what's going on. Now I'm splitting my time again because I really like what they've done here with Flickr. But it gets better. It gets better. So now if I tap on a photo once, there's the bar at the bottom, the little kind of menu bar at the bottom is contextual. And one of the things that shows up is an eye. So I tap on that eye and I get a really nice metadata display for that photo that shows the camera they use, the focal length, the aperture, the ISO, the white balance, shutter speed, the exposure program, you know, right there off the top. Then you get the date that it was taken, how many views, what the license is on it, all that good stuff, all right there. So this is pretty cool, and it looks really nice. The display is an overlay. What they do is they kind of blur out the photo in the background, and then they put this very nice overlay. It looks terrific. And I'll tell you, for me, and I think probably for a lot of photographers, we're interested in the metadata. And so Flickr 3.0 provides that in a very, very nice way. While you're in the stream there and you're looking at other stuff, if you want to explore Flickr, which I think this is one of the nice treats in photography because Flickr Explorer is wonderful. So many beautiful images on it. There's a little compass in the upper right-hand corner. You tap on that, and that will take you to Explore, and you can look at all the super fine photography that has gone on that day. Once you're out of Explore, or you want to get out of Explore, you just tap the X that's up there, and they also put the search field right up there at the top. So you can search for anything you want on Flickr. When you go into the camera mode by tapping on the camera at the bottom, you can take a picture as always. You can use the Flickr filters as always. But if you tap on the little thumbnail in the lower left, you can pick up one of your photos and you can edit it. And they have some terrific editing tools. And you have things in the editing tools like a histogram with a levels control. Really nice. I mean, it's like levels in Aperture or Photoshop or something. And you have all the other goodies too, plus the filter, sharpening, white balance, all that. So the editing tools are quite excellent also. Very well done. The Flickr filters, I think the Flickr filters are terrific. I've liked them a lot. It's free. It's just a straight update. It's very nice. If you're a Flickr user and you have an iPhone, I highly recommend that you take a look at this. And I'll tell you, it looks very nice on the iPad too. I'm using it on my iPad mini with Retina display, and it looks good. You know, I have it at 2x, and the quality is not quite as good as on my iPhone 5s, but it's very, very good, and certainly doesn't bother my browsing experience. Anyway, so that's Flickr 3.0. I think they've done a great job. Hopefully, it's going to settle down for a bit. You know, I'll go down there, I'll record the update, we'll get it all ready to go, and then maybe we all can just enjoy this for a bit, and any little adjustments they make hopefully won't be to the UI, but just maybe a little additional functionality. So anyway, that is story number two, Flickr 3.0 for iOS. It's solid. Let's take a stroll over to the screening room. I wanted to do something different this week, and the pick is Designing an Infographic by Nigel French. And I love infographics. They're those things, you know, we've all seen them. USA Today does them, a lot of publications do them, where you have a lot of information in the graphic about a topic, and there's cool artwork, and there's call-outs and relevant facts, and you know, so just by looking at this one graphic, you really get a very complete story about whatever's going on, but you can absorb it quickly. And there's a real art to these things. They're absolutely, I think they're beautiful. And just, I mean, I like them better than a chart and a table and all that, just because they combine the efficiency of a table, but they have the beauty of an illustration. So anyway, Nigel French is really good at this stuff. This guy is a master graphic designer. And he has done a title on design infographic. And I'll tell you, even if you're not interested in designing your own infographic, it's fun to watch this, the intro movie even, because you get to see all the steps involved for creating these. And really, in all honesty, how much work they are and to do them. But, you know, yet when they're done, I mean, you have something that not only would be a nice infographic for a web page or something, this is something you could print out and put on the wall. I mean, they're cool, especially if it's something that you're really interested in. So Nigel French really takes you behind the scenes on creating these things. It's a lot of fun. If you appreciate the kind of work that graphic designers do and all the steps that they have to go through to create these things, you're going to love this. And then, of course, if you ever wanted to create your own infographic, this is the place to go, right? He maps it out for you and shows you exactly how to do it step by step. So that's this week's pick from the screening room, Designing an Infographic with Nigel French. And you can check that out by going to the TDS screening room, www.lynda.com, that's with a Y, Lynda/thedigitalstory. And of course, I have a link to it in the show notes. And while you're there, if you really like this, you can start your 7-day free trial to watch all the other design, photography, and computing titles. They have a bunch of great stuff in there. All right, let's move over to the Nimbleosity Report. And this is brought to you by The Nimble Photographer, thenimblephotographer.com. And I am going to talk about Loom, Loom and Doom for this segment. So once again, my kiss of death proves fatal for startup mobile backup apps. It started with Everpix. I was very excited about what they were doing. I thought they really had it together. And I loved their service. I was backing up my iPhone, my iPad, and my Mac photos all to Everpix, and then could access those photos from any of my devices. And they would store them safely for me in the cloud and give me a very nice user interface to look at them. Then they ran out of money and they went out of business. So, you know, I was looking around. I go, okay, because I believe so strongly about backing up your mobile photos, I settled on Loom. I thought Loom, L-O-O-M, was the next best offering out there. And I got behind Loom. And of course, they said, yeah, we're solid. We're good. You know, and they had a great plan. And they also had a very nice user interface. And I really enjoyed using Loom. So I was using Loom for a while. I think last week I reported that Dropbox announced Carousel. I think it was in last week's podcast, which is a very nice user interface for Android and iOS for keeping track and viewing your images that you have stored in all these different folders in Dropbox. And I like Carousel. I think it's pretty good. I don't think it's as far along in terms of its development as Everpix or Loom, but I thought it was quite serviceable, and I think I gave it a pretty happy rating. Well, the notice that we got is that, first of all, Loom sent all of us that are subscribers a note and said, guess what? We are closing our doors May 16, I believe. But fear not, because we have now been acquired by Dropbox and will be integrated into Carousel by Dropbox. Here's your option. So you can, if you have Dropbox already, then the amount of storage that you had on Loom will be transferred over there at no additional cost. So I had something like 5 gigabytes. That goes over to Dropbox, and they did transfer it over, I have to say, right away, and move all your Loom content into your Dropbox account. So they transfer the storage that you had and move the content over. So that's one option that you have. The other option is that you can take your whole Loom library and download it into a zipped archive. I already had Dropbox, and I like Dropbox. You know, I use it a lot. I have a fair amount of storage there. So I went ahead and took advantage of the option to move my Loom account over to Dropbox. They made it very simple. You just click a button, and then the process starts. Your additional storage is added to Dropbox, and they move stuff over. The problem is, of course, because, you know, Loom used a different file name system and all that, there are some duplicates in there, and I don't know if I'm going to worry about them or not, but I know for a fact that I have some duplication in there, and at some point I may want to deal with it. But in terms of the transition itself, It went pretty smoothly. And like I said, all I had to do was click a button. So now my Loom account is closed. So now I'm very much in the Dropbox carousel camp for one of my primary backups. Now my other mobile backup system is iCloud and PhotoStream, which I have being copied into my iPhoto library on my Mac. So that's one flow, but I like to have multiple flows because in the mobile world, this stuff seems to be happening more often than I care to admit. So I usually keep a couple going, and my other one was Loom, but now it looks like my other one is going to be Carousel by Dropbox. So here I am. Now I am a full-fledged Carousel user, and we'll be watching and seeing how that goes. Now, Dropbox, of course, very well established, and they are the 800-pound gorilla in this space, so I'm not too worried about them. And maybe another piece of the good news to all this is, now that we're finally in Dropbox, after much resistance, it'll probably be here to stay, and we'll probably be fine. So rest in peace, Loom. Sorry, hope I didn't cause your demise by recommending you to everyone. But I have to tell you, all the time I've been in technology, I have not had a bang-bang like this in terms of demise. So Everpix and Loom in less than a year, back-to-back, that is a first for me, and I hope it's a last, too. Let's do a little virtual camera club news. So the fall color workshop with Safari West is rolling along. Just want to remind you that is October 24 through 26, 2014. We still have some spots open. If you're interested in doing what I consider our premium workshop of the season, just go to the workshops page on the Digital Story. About the middle of the page, you'll see a send me info. Go ahead and just put your name and your email and choose Safari West, and I'll get you a registration form. We're going to have a great time. We do everything on this workshop. This is just a fantastic event, and it's coming up October 24 through 26 here in Sonoma County. Beautiful Sonoma County. Great time of year to be here. It's just absolutely gorgeous. Our photo assignment for April is Flower Power, and that is sponsored by the good folks at SizzlePix, SizzlePix.com. They're in the middle of a spring promotion right now where you can get 20% off any size, any quantity. All you have to do after you fill out your order is put TDS or the Digital Story in the comments field, and they will subtract 20% from the cost of your Sizzle Picks, which is a fantastic deal because this is the best in the business. High quality aluminum, beautiful handcrafted process, just absolutely gorgeous. You will see your image in a way that you've never seen it before. Like I like to say, it's like putting a retina display on the wall. SizzlePix, SizzlePix.com. And they have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Our friends over at Red River Paper, I was using some paper today. And I was printing with the Epson R2400, printing some black and white. I love printing black and white. Been writing about black and white all day today. Had to do some printing as part of that writing, and then of course got all absorbed in it. Probably spent more time than I should have on the printing, and should have been writing and getting ready for this podcast. So I was using the Polar Matte today in the R2400 printing monochrome, and I really like the Polar Matte. I have a lot of different surfaces, but I like having a really bright matte paper when I'm printing black and white, because it just makes the image pop more to me. So you get all the benefits of matte paper, which is, just feels beautiful in the hands. It looks great, has a texture, just gorgeous. You get all the benefits of the matte paper, but you get some real pop. And a lot of times, a lot of matte papers have kind of a yellow tinge to them, and which is great when that's what you want. But if you really want your black and white images to pop on that paper, take a look at this Polar White by Red River Paper. It's terrific. I've got some prints drying down right now, and I can't stop looking at them. They just look so good on that paper. So anyway, Red River Paper, they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. They make the paper and they sell the paper directly to you, and you save. And I think that's going to do it for this week. Next week, boy, you know, I've got a couple things that have been moved back, but I think they're all going to come to a head for next week's show. So it'll be very interesting. I have some updates and some announcements that I hope I get to share with you next week. So make sure you come back. Have a great week. Get out there, take some pictures, play with some of these things I've talked about, have some fun, and then we'll all meet back here and we'll get updated on the week's activities and talk shop for a half an hour. All right, until then, have a great week and bye-bye now.